coastlines, interactions on an unlikely scale, as in Canada with their vast rainforests. Here's David Suzuki in Vancouver with a remarkable example of interaction over vast distances, including the oceans.
One of the problems I think we face today is that we look at the world in a fragmented way. We shatter the world around us, and we don't see the exquisite interconnectivity of everything. And that's why I love to look at something like the Great Barrier Reef, where the reef itself is an entity made up of so many component parts, from the sharks right down to the microorganisms that are vital to that whole thing. And in Canada, we have a similar story that has only come out recently, and that is that pinched between the coastal mountains and the Pacific Ocean is this thin strip that runs all the way from Alaska down to Northern California called the temperate rainforest. A rare kind of ecosystem. And one of its characteristics is it has the highest biomass, the weight of living things, of any ecosystem on Earth. There's more weight of living things here than there is in the Amazon. And that's because we've got big trees. And the dilemma has always been, wait a minute now, it rains a hell of a lot. It's a rainforest, and that rain washes nutrients out of the soil. How can we have such big trees when there's so little nutrient? And the great discovery that was made, and one of the people that did the big studies was Tom Reimken at the University of Victoria. He tried to say, well, where the heck is that nitrogen in the soil coming from that the trees depend on? And what he found was that year after year, we get literally tens of millions of salmon returning to the forest, and the carcasses of the salmon are literally feeding the trees. Now, on land, the nitrogen form we find is called nitrogen 14. It's a common isotope of nitrogen. In the oceans, there is a much higher signature of nitrogen 15, which is a heavier isotope. So what Tom found is that when the baby salmon go out to sea, they spend 2 to 5 years in the oceans loading up with nitrogen 15, because everything they eat is in the oceans. And when they come back, then by the millions, they're basically this big blob of nitrogen, and then everything celebrates. The seals are eating them, the whales are eating them, they get to the fresh water, then the eagles and the wolves and the bears are all eating them. And one of the major vectors are bears. The bears will come down and fish together, but when they grab a salmon, they don't want to eat with the other bears. They rush off up to 150 meters on either side of the river, and they'll eat the best parts, the brains, the belly, the eggs, and they dump the carcass and go back for more. So what Tom Reimken showed was, on average, a single bear will take about 600 salmon. And of course, the bears and the wolves and the eagles are pooping and peeing all throughout the forest as well. All of that is rich in nitrogen 15. So they're basically fertilizing the forest with the carcasses of the salmon. And Tom showed that when you drill a core out of a tree, you can then look at the tree rings and show when there's a fat ring, you measure the amount of nitrogen 15 from the ocean, and sure enough, that was a year of a big run. So you can correlate the growth of the trees with the size of the salmon run. Now, it gets even more wonderful than that. When the bear drops the carcass in the forest, very quickly salamanders and ravens and all kinds of things are eating the remnants, but the main thing are flies. They lay their eggs, and within a few days, the carcass is just seething with maggots that are eating up the meat. They drop into the forest litter, and then the next year in the spring, flies hatch by the trillions just at the time the birds from South America are coming through on their way to the Arctic. So those flies are critical components of the feeding of these birds. And the flies are made up primarily of the nitrogen 15 from the carcasses of the salmon. Then many of the salmon don't get eaten by other creatures. They die and sink to the bottom of the river. And within a few days, you'll see that they become covered with a slime of fungus. And the fungus is eating the meat, and then the fungus is eaten by bacteria and other invertebrates, copepods, so that when the baby salmon emerge from the gravel 4 months later, the river is filled with microorganisms and invertebrates that are made up of the nitrogen-15 from the carcasses of the adult salmon. So in dying, the adults prepare a meal, a feast, for their babies that are going to feed on the way to the ocean. So this beautiful interconnectivity, it connects the southern hemisphere with the northern hemisphere. It connects the waters with the air and the land. And what do humans come along? Humans come along, oh, wow, look at all these resources. Yes, we're going to manage them. Well, there is salmon. Yes, that's the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. Oh, gee, there are the native food fishery. That's the Department of Indian Affairs. And, oh, yeah, there are the sports fishers. Well, that's the Department of Tourism. And then we look at the river and go, well, that's irrigation for agriculture. So that's a Minister of Agriculture. But then we get energy from them. So that's a Minister of Energy. And, oh, yeah, well, the trees are important. That's the Minister of Forests. And then we have the rocks and around the rivers. That's the Minister of Mining. And so what we have is what is a single system, like your Great Barrier Reef. And we then fragment it into categories of human use of that forest that ensures that we'll never manage our way out of anything. We don't see the whole system.
Unless the guys talk to each other, don't the departments meet?
Are you kidding? They're competing all the time. Wait a minute now. You know, what you're going to do interferes with my ability to mine this area here. Don't tell me that the river's important. The minerals are important here. We need the water for our mining operation. I mean, it's ludicrous that they don't talk together. And, you know, we had a system here called PENSEMA, Pacific North Coast Integrated Management. This is a revolutionary idea. All of the stakeholders, which I hate that word, having to do with the Pacific Coast from Vancouver Island up to Alaska. So we had the natives, we had the government, we had environmentalists, we had the foresters, we had the fishers. Everybody with some kind of stake in that whole system were coming together to negotiate what are we going to do with the forests. And I got up and gave the opening remarks, and I said, this is historic. If we can all come together and agree that the health of the oceans is critical to us. And I told them the story of the goose that laid the golden egg. As long as the goose was fat and healthy, it gave an egg every day. But the guy that owned it got greedy. He said, I want more than one a day. He killed the goose, and guess what? There were no eggs there. So I said, that's the same thing. Our goose is the ocean. And if we can all work to ensure that it's healthy, then we'll get our share. Man, did they get pissed off at me. Don't tell me the right of these loggers over here is more important. I'm a fisherman, and I go back four generations. Don't tell me. So if we keep looking at our own self-interest without seeing the big picture and remembering the goose that laid the golden egg, we're going to screw it up for sure.
David Suzuki in Vancouver. He returns to The Science Show in 2 weeks to talk about the start of The Science Show's sister program, Quirks and Quarks, 40 years ago.